wasted a lot of time not doing the right thing and not being the best that I could be. And that's why, you know, this second chapter, it's so important. My mission is to talk about the things we don't talk about, that we're embarrassed about. You need to care more about your people than what the mayor thinks of you, the way you handle this. Because when we don't do that, then we don't put our people's priority. We don't put them ahead of our own. You're going to have a bad day. You're going to have a bad day. Mm-hmm. What do we do with that bad day when we get home? The solutions are simple. Undertaking them takes fortitude and a commitment to something more than yourself.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-hosts, Bonnie Rumley, LCSW, EMT, and Dr. Stacy Raymond. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with John Kelly. He's a law enforcement life coach about first responder wellness, taking responsibility, falling and getting back up, the caring of others, and self-care. We invite you to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook, Respond to Wellness, Inc., PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and check out our website, ResponderTV.com, for all past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with John after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW, EMTB.
Today we're joined by John Kelly. He's a law enforcement veteran of 33 years, and John was involved in hundreds of critical incidents and a wide variety of specialized assignments. This diversification has given him a unique perspective in understanding the needs and obstacles facing our first responders. The greatest threat to his survival wasn't the multiple attempts on his life from suspects, but came from within. An alcoholic addict and adulterer, John struggled to overcome the darkness of PTS and suicidal ideation. Overcoming these obstacles made it absolutely necessary for him to show our brothers and sisters how you can fall, sometimes repeatedly, and keep getting back up. Great to meet you, John, and have you on the show, and welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Thank you for having me. I'm truly blessed. It's great to be here.
So, John, I'd like to start by asking you, throughout your long career, what have you observed with regard to stress among first responders as they progress through their careers?
It's a great question, Stacy. I think when we start out, I've got a window of 30 years. And when you start out, you don't know what you don't know. There was no such thing as talking. We don't talk. And the coping mechanisms that were widely available were drinking, at least in my circle, and I think most circles. And so for an alcoholic, see, I was an alcoholic before I got on the job. And I kid, I go, how could you be an alcoholic and get hired? Well, an alcoholic was interviewing me. I mean, you don't have to go far in this thing of ours to see people struggling with addiction. And we kind of become experts at it for time period X, right? You know, we're able to manage stress in a very dysfunctional, destructive way. Mm-hmm. And it's usually not until, you know, you come smashing up against a wall that either you're forced to get help or, you know, it's something that there's just no other alternative. So stress, I think the progression, I think the generations that have followed me, there's an awareness, right? There's an awareness that, you know, maybe, you know, drinking to the point of oblivion and passing out isn't the best way to deal with the trauma that you've been exposed to. And maybe, just maybe, talking with culturally competent therapists and developing a network like you've developed here of people that care, that might be a better way to go ahead and address the issues of stress. And I think that we're on a great path now.
So, John, for someone listening to this podcast who has this very struggle that you're describing, how would that person have the courage to break the cycle of self-destruction? What do you think has to happen? Because obviously we have these conversations hoping that we're affecting change, and we know that we are in a lot of cases. But what would you say to that person in terms of getting the courage to face it?
Great question, Bonnie. So I wish I could tell you, Bonnie, that I had this epiphany that I needed to do something about my drinking, and that wasn't the case. And that plays into other people, right? See, when you're in the middle of it, when you're in an addicted state, you knowing that you're a problem, it doesn't happen. Right. And so on one of the many nights, I showed up to work drunk. I had friends. I talk about the difference between supporting and enabling. My squad enabled, right? Because I think we enable when we don't see a viable option forward for our friend. So instead of, if there's no way to get him help without him losing his job, then I'm not going to get him help, and we're just going to, we're going to enable. So I showed up to work drunk. My partners covered my zone, answered all my calls to about 4 a.m. while I slept it off. And then the sergeant needed to see me at 4 a.m. because I never made it to roll call. And so he was an alcoholic as well, thank God, because I think he saw him in me and pity on me. And so he sent me home. He could have arrested me. Could have put me in the back seat of the car and taken me to the BAT to have my blood alcohol tested. He didn't. Brought me back the next night with the other sergeant, and they sat me down and they said, hey, that will never happen again. Mm-hmm. You have two options. We can command refer you, or you can get help on your own. The choice is yours, but it's never going to happen again. And so I went to our EAP. And it was a hard conversation to have, but it wasn't scary because it went like this. For everybody who's struggling with, should I get EAP involved? Hey, Judy, I've got a problem drinking and I need some help. She says, give me a second. All right, give this guy a call. Click. That was it. It was beautiful. There was no monster there was no shame. It was, you need help? Give me a second. Let me go through the Rolodex, because that's what we had back then, Rolodex. And so I call a guy who's a retired Davy cop who runs AA meetings for cops Thursday nights at 8 o'clock at his house. Who would have ever known that such an animal existed, right? I mean, so this whole, I don't want to make the call. I'm afraid of the stigma. Bullshit. There is no stigma. Everybody knows you're the drunk, by the way. If you know, we think that we're doing such a great job of not letting anybody know our business. When you're passed out in uniform over the front wheel of your police car trying to back it up in the driveway, everybody knows you're the drunk, right? So let's not keep the secret that you think you're keeping anymore. And so I made the call, and that was the first step in me taking my life back.
I'm David Dashinger. I'm executive producer and host of Respond to Resilience podcast. And we'd like to welcome the Angio Foundation on board as a top sponsor on a national level. We became aware of their work in 2018, along with 9/11 Cancer Scan. And as we've become acquainted with their work, also the work of Dr. Robert Bard, we also forged alliances with Firefighters Against Cancer and Exposure and the New York Cancer Resource Alliance. Through that, we've been happy to spread the word about Get Checked Now, That's become a mantra around here, and that's because we can only be our own best advocates for our own wellness. As firefighters, being exposed to toxins and carcinogens on a regular basis, we need to not only take care of our decon right after exposure, but also to get checked on a regular basis. Once again, we'd like to welcome the Angio Foundation to the Responder Resilience family, and we look forward to a continued alliance on a national basis for the first responder community. And thank you for sharing that story so honestly. In today's department and law enforcement department, or even any first responder agency, have things changed where in that scenario, they might be handled differently? Or do you have ideas on how to handle a situation like that with some of the other tools and resources that are available now that might not have been available when you went through your situation?
Absolutely. Great question, David. I think, so back in the day, there wasn't anybody that I associated with that didn't have a drinking problem. It was just commonplace. Mm-hmm. And so in order for someone to check your behavior, they have to check their own. Right? And that's not going to happen in this thing of ours, right? Not likely. And so that I didn't know about AA or even that there was programs for cops ran by cops. I think the awareness component, right? And the establishment, the formalization of peer support, I think is a great first bridge to take a, you know, you put your toe in the water, right? Just a little bit, and you go, oh, okay, all right, that's not that bad. I think peer support is the welcoming embrace that first responders need to know exists, because that's non-threatening. Right. That's not scary. That's just, hey, I'm going to, you know, Jimmy saw me and he approached me because I look a little off and I look like there's something on my mind. And the conversation started with a colleague, and I have this theory, people in pain, people that are suffering, they want to talk. We just got to create an environment that allows them to do so without being judged. And I think peer support does that. So we didn't have peer support 30 years ago.
Right.
We thought we had peer support. We had enable support. You know, that was the enabling unit. You know, everybody just enabled everybody.
Very informal peer support.
Yeah. I mean, when you're at peer support and you're all getting drunk,
drinking buddies.
I don't know where the meeting goes from there. You know, it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
But there's also, you know, the difference between having that conversation, whether it's peer support or, you know, reaching out to EAP, you know, under somewhat normal circumstances versus the cry for help when something really, really bad happens, right? Like an MVA, like someone's, one of our guys gets into a car accident because they're drinking. Those are the things that, you know, we don't want to see happen. But like, how can we be proactive to, you know, reach those people before that happens?
And I think, David, to that point, everybody's got to know, and it's I'm hopefully speaking at an internal affairs investigator conference this year, and it's like, you know, I was suspended 3 times and, you know, investigated by the FBI. I mean, I think I'm a pretty good employee, which is kind of the dichotomy of all that. It's crazy. But there's got to be an environment that's created. You know, when we've got all these catchphrases in this space of ours, right? We got to make it okay to not be okay, right? Mm-hmm. Love it. But what is that? What that means is that command can't treat you like a pariah. Command can't penalize you for having a problem. And I'm of the school that, listen, everybody gets one. Everybody gets one, right? You get one oops, right? Unless there's a death or a serious injury as the result of your malfeasance, everybody gets one. Mm. And it's what you do with that opportunity, right? I think we're so conditioned that everybody has to get smacked. And when everybody's got to get smacked, I don't know that I want to raise my hand, or you know what, as a friend, I don't want to report or bring to light John's inappropriate behavior, because you're going to smack him and you're not going to get him help, and you might cost him his job, and I'm not going to be the reason that happens. So I think it's incumbent upon leadership to be very clear, not to condone, right? But the message needs to be, we don't care what you got going on or how you got there. Our only objective is to get you help so you can be safe and healthy. And then we'll take it from there. I think if that message was getting out, you'd have a lot more people raising their hand and going, hey, I'm not real happy with the way things are going, and I would love for you to be a part of my solution. But right now, I think this, when we talk about stigma, it's not the stigma of self-shame. It's the stigma, and it's the fear of losing your job. We've got families. We've got families to take care of. I've got children. I've got, you know, and when that's the overwhelming sentiment, that man, I saw the way they treated John Kelly, and that ain't gonna be me. So I'll just figure it out, and that doesn't work.
You know, John, I think the unfortunate piece of it is, I think the punitive and the punishment comes from departments when they fear liability, right? They fear the liability of the department, or they fear who they have to answer to downtown for their department. And I think so much of the punishment piece comes out of that, which is unfortunate, because if it was more supportive and let's understand why Johnny did that, you know, and see what he needs rather than always treating it that way.
It's unfortunate, because what it's indicative of is weak leadership. Right? And I don't want to go, you'll get me all jacked up and I'll go off on a tangent and we'll never get back to what we're talking about. But as I talk about leadership too, and what our bosses need to be doing for our people, and it gets back to caring. You need to care more about your people than what the mayor thinks of the way you handle this. And you need to be in a position to tell the mayor to take a hike, in nice terms. I can say take a hike. That's nice. right? Because when we don't do that, then we don't put our people's priority, that we don't put them ahead of our own. And that's a problem. So the solutions are simple. Undertaking them takes fortitude and a commitment to something more than yourself. And when you can't commit to that, you know, that perpetuates this cycle of people not getting help.
Right.
You got me all jacked up there.
Let's do some grounding, John.
Take a few deep breaths.
I'm going to go do a cold plunge and then refocus and then come back in.
Yeah, we'll do a little cryo break and then we'll come back into the conversation.
Perhaps that's a good spot to talk about triggers, John.
You know, I've been blessed to have so many good bosses, but you know, you learn just as much from the good as you do the bad. And it pains me, right? Because, listen, I haven't always been a good boss. I've been a real shitty boss at times, not putting my people ahead of me. And when you come to that realization and you start having those conversations with yourself, it's not a good place to be. It's necessary, but it's not a good place to be. So another one of my failings, then you realize, wait a minute, I don't have to do anything superhuman. I just need to care more about their well-being than mine. And then if I do that, my well-being is elevated. Oh, okay. And so, yeah, it's there's so many lessons along the way. And that's what I think the thing that makes dealing with stress and trauma and falling is so multifaceted, is that there isn't, you can't just say, okay, do this and then you're going to be okay.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of things that need to be done, that need to be sustained for you to be where I'm at right now. I'm in a really amazing place right now. And it's shocking to me that it's taken me as long as it has. I mean, I'll be 56 next week. And, you know, I wasted a lot of time. Wasted a lot of time not doing the right thing and not being the best that I could be. And that's why, you know, this second chapter is it's so important. It's so important.
Our mission at Responder Wellness, Inc. is to subsidize or provide free of charge safety equipment and wellness services to first responders, including police officers, firefighters, EMS personnel, and 911 operators throughout Connecticut. Resources include scholarships to train new EMTs, a responder and veteran-only AA group in Danbury, Connecticut, as well as police vests, a fire and EMS boot program, yoga classes, gym memberships, and t-shirts. The founder of Responder Wellness, Inc. co-leads a peer support group sponsored by Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. Responder Wellness, Inc. is a nonprofit 501c3. Find us on the web at responderwellness.org, on Facebook at Responder Wellness, Inc., or email us responderwellness@gmail.com. Responder Wellness, Inc., putting responders first.
So for you, John, it really took a sergeant reflecting back to you their observation, right? Rather yes. than being punitive. So really just inviting you to look, you know, at yourself based on their observation of you, that this was really unhealthy behavior.
Right.
And to your point of if command staff can look after their own, it kind of gives permission for the police officers, firefighters, whoever the first responder is, to then look at themselves and take care of themselves. It really does have to be modeled from the top. But now with police, there seems to be a challenge of like excessive use of force. If you look at the George Floyd incident, right? I think chiefs seem to be, wanting to keep at least law enforcement on their toes and not, you know, breaking any rules. So that's now like a new conundrum. It's almost like just as we started through peer support and like people paying attention to their symptoms and getting help for their symptoms. Now, you know, there's this focus on excessive use of force and the public videotaping police in their behaviors and putting the worst of it out there on YouTube. So how do we reconcile that? That police chiefs feel the pressure of, well, yeah, we have wellness issues, but we also have, we're in the spotlight as police officers.
You know, I take issue a little bit with your first statement, and this is coming from a place of love, okay? We don't have an excessive use of force issue in law enforcement. Millions of interactions daily. And the percentages, you can't, a speck of dust, 0.00087% of those daily interactions involve any use of force.
Right.
And so instead of defending, instead of staying, you know what? There are cases that occur in law enforcement that are unacceptable. And we have mechanisms in place to deal with those people, right? We're going to conduct an investigation, and we're going to wherever that we find the truth, you know, justice will be served. Now that may not be what the public wants to hear. That may not be what is a great caption on Fox or CNN, but the vast majority. 99.9% of the people out there, listen, don't want any physicalities. My best days at work, Stacy, involved just helping and not having conflict, right? Mm-hmm. So the misnomer that somehow the police are out there looking to engage and beat people and get involved any time we have to put hands on somebody, I want you to think about this. Anytime we ever have to put hands on somebody, it's because they are not following instructions. They are refusing to do what we ask them to do. Turn around and put your hands behind your back. You're going to jail because you've violated the law. When they refuse to do that, they're the problem, not us. And we're not in a position that we can just walk away and pretend that they didn't just break the law. So I think our bosses need to do a better job of explaining why we did what we did. Now, are there cases of guys that are suffering mentally, physically, emotionally, that their actions get that it manifests itself at work and they do the wrong thing? 100%. That's why the importance of being proactive. See, I think the chiefs are putting the cart before the horse. We don't need to worry about use of force. We need to worry about officer wellness, because if we have people in our ranks that are physically and mentally healthy and well, they're not blowing a gasket on somebody.
You're right. I like that answer.
They're not losing their shit on somebody because they are coping with the trauma and the stress. Stacey, if we have an officer that's been exposed to trauma, an incident 2-3 weeks in a row, and that happens all the time, and then that goes, we don't talk about it. We don't do a emotional debrief about the guy who had to pull the baby out of the tub and give it CPR when he's got three kids at home. When we don't talk to him and pull him aside and focus on him because we don't know our people like we should. And a week later, he loses it on the dad that hits the kid, and he puts the dad in the hospital, and the chief's going, oh my God, he beat that parent. Yeah, you know what, boss? He beat that parent because he absolutely lost it because he was unable to deal with the trauma and the stress that he's been cumulative in nature, Doc, cumulative in nature. He hasn't rectified in his mind. And so, again, the way we go about this isn't the press conference condemning physicality. It's a horrible, let me tell you, I did it for 30 years, and there's not much you can do with somebody that says, nah, I'm not doing what you told me to do.
Right.
You got to make them. And if, if you've ever tried to make somebody do something physically, it gets ugly and messy real quick. So I think our efforts, right, to allow the chief at the microphone to throw his shoulders back and be confident about his men and women, he needs to know that they're doing everything in their power proactively, preventatively, to make sure they're healthy and well. And I think if that becomes the focus, you don't have those issues. You don't have them. I mean, it's, I have a tendency, and I'll concede to this. I like to oversimplify things because that's what that's what my brain understands. It understands simple. And I think that use of force is an issue for the public. The public needs to do what they're told. And then we'll work it out, right? But you can't, we can talk about de-escalation. Listen, de-escalation gets more people hurt. See, because we're not driving the resistance. You know, how many times have you watched a video where you're going, you're screaming at the cop to do something? Like, what? Enough. Like, stop it. You know, and then the longer we allow a situation to go unaddressed, the more people get hurt. And so I think that if we invest in our people's physical and mental wellness, genuinely, not some box checking system that we have in place just so we say we did something about it, that if we actually care about our people's well-being, that ripple effect, the community is the one of the sole benefactors from the department having healthy officers in its ranks. And then the incidents that you do see nationwide will even become fewer and fewer, right? Because, you know, we police our own. And I think if we just care a little bit more about our own, a lot of these problems will work themselves out. You got me jacked up again. You guys are two for two, man. Oh, I gotta go take another cold plunge.
I have to say that, you know, wearing my EMS hat, it's been wonderful actually to see a lot of police officers, you know, they do not want hands-on at all for themselves. And I think the public really doesn't understand that. And, you know, a lot of the police officers that I've worked on scenes with for EMS, I mean, they will call us, like we have intricate plans together on scene as to how we're going to handle a difficult situation. Mm-hmm. And all of that is in mind, how to protect this person and keep them safe and keep all of us safe. You know, so I've seen a lot of the proof of what you're talking about on the street, and you can really see such a difference, you know, when those officers are thinking about their wellness, our wellness, and the wellness of either the suspect or the patient. Those scenes are incredible to watch.
Yeah, that's somebody's brother, sister, mother, father. Right. Listen, we're not mindless drones here. You know, I want them to treat me the way I would, you know, I want you to treat my mother or my sister, right? And that's where we're coming from. But I'm not going to go too far out of my lane here. But like, so Hollywood has done an amazing job of now painting the cop is a bad guy, somebody to be feared, right? And so you got that. You've got video games that teach kids that the more cops you kill, the more points you get, and then you can upgrade to a nicer car, Grand Theft Auto, and the narrative is shifting. So the public no longer sees you as human. That's why it's so important for us to break out of our groups and have interactions with people, so they go, I mean, you got the same problems I do. Like you got kids and you've got a mortgage and you worry about the safety of your loved ones when they go out. I said, because I think that there is a segment, right? Whenever you show repeatedly, it's about any group. Whenever you paint any group, right? That's why we have stereotypes. Whenever you paint a group repeatedly over and over again, and you depict them a certain way,
right?
Militaristic, wanting to kick people's teeth in, you know, heartless, just wanting to beat a minority. If Training Day, right, the movie Training Day becomes the lens that you look at law enforcement through, we're all corrupt, we're untruthful, and we're murderers. And how do you break that stereotype when that's all that's being fed to the communities that we patrol? Mm-hmm. Right? It's an uphill battle. Battle.
Sure, yeah, John.
I didn't get as jacked up about that one as the other two, but you know.
But you bring up an amazing point, which is, I think, very overlooked, and that's the incredible influence of Hollywood television, film, and violent video games on, you know, on this the population. That you know, the blame gets assessed in so many different areas, but we don't look at that very much. Like, that is something, you know, it's the lens that most people are seeing first responders, military, you name it. That's the lens that's the only lens they have, right? They don't know what it's like to be a cop, a day in the life of a cop. Right, and right. So we need to somehow get that perspective out there, right?
Right. And then when you add to that dynamic, the lack of a strong father figure in the home that can tell the kid, hey, not all cop, that this isn't real what you're watching. That's not the policeman is your friend. And if ever you get lost, if ever you need help, you run to that man or woman in uniform, because they're going to help you. That's not the narrative that's getting. It's like, if you see the cop, hide from them, because they're all killers. And then you're like, what the heck are we doing, man? You know? Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, have you ever seen the documentary on HBO with Ernie and Joe, Crisis Cops?
I have not. I'm aware of it. I have not watched it.
We strongly recommend it. We've had Ernie on our show to interview him, but that was a wonderful, wonderful depiction of really caring and trained officers. And I thought it painted them in such a positive light. It's really worth checking out. And even for our viewers, if you haven't watched it's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And it really shows you the human side of police that, right. Like you said, a lot of people are trained to have a blind eye to or programmed the opposite direction to.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Well, John, let's shift gears, and maybe this will put you into your happy place a little more.
I don't know that I have a happy place today.
You guys are
really, man. All right, here we go.
Tell us more about your stuff you're doing. Since you've retired, you've got a second chapter, which involves a podcast. It involves a book you've written, and I know you're out there coaching and speaking. So talk a little bit about what you're doing with your second chapter.
You Jedi. You're a Jedi warrior. You just brought a smile on my face. Yeah, so I retired in 2020, and I knew I wasn't done. You know, I figured some things out. Right. And I think it's incumbent upon us that when we do figure some things out, that we share that information mm-hmm. with the people that we mm-hmm. care about. Right. Paying it forward. So I developed a wellness program called Sometimes Heroes Need Help. And it revolves around your personal, professional, financial, physical and mental health. And through a series of real world life failures and some wins, I discuss and implement a program that really is proactive, and it doesn't make it a big deal to admit that you failed. I think we're so, you know, we get conditioned to believe that if you're not a winner, you truly are a loser, and there's no benefit of ever being a loser. I mean, that's why everybody gets a trophy now, right? I mean, but if you understand that growth comes from failure, right? Uh-huh. If you can get that through your head that if I fail, that's just an opportunity for me to grow, learn, and then go get back after it, then failure is absolutely necessary. I welcome failure because that's the only way I'm going to get better. And so I didn't always think that way. So when it came to my marriage and my intentional dismantling of my family, by the grace of God, people that cared, a loving wife, I was able to turn it around. We've been together for 30 years now, despite my best efforts to destroy it. And I don't know. She loved me at a time that I gave her absolutely no reason to do so. And so I got to take that lesson and share that because when we look at relationships, right, we don't have a class on relationships. You know, when we find out about love languages, when we're in marriage counseling, right, we need
true.
To know about love languages before we go to marriage counseling, right? Mm-hmm. And so I share that. I share the importance of caring for each other and not necessarily having to like each other, right? Especially at work, right? And we've somehow confused the two that you know I have to like you to care about you, and that's just wrong. That's false. Mm-hmm. I talk about our finances and our physical and mental health. I talk about dark places. I say the S word, right? Suicide. You know, don't say suicide because if you say suicide and somebody hears you, everybody's going to go out and kill themselves, right? Don't say that word.
Every time somebody says it on our show, we get flagged by YouTube. Like there's some AI out there that's like monitoring the word suicide. It's crazy. Right.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations,
pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT.
There's a woman named Dr. Olivia Johnson, real smart cookie. And she's
just
come
spoke
up
with her.
Talked to her this
ago.
Week.
She's a sweetheart. So yeah. I've been talking with her for a while. And, you know, her fatal 10, right? Mm-hmm. It's not about one incident. One incident can be the catalyst for an avalanche, right? Mm-hmm. But it's usually a series. Mm-hmm. Of events and areas in our life that have gone unaddressed for time period X. And, you know, so I like to say we all experience a slide, right? Everybody experiences a slide. The key to us staying healthy is being able to stop the slide before it becomes an avalanche. Because once we're in an avalanche, everybody dies. Right? Nobody's surviving an avalanche. So addressing all those variables preemptively keeps that situation from ever developing. And so I think that's really where our efforts need to be. And and so that's what my mission is, really, is to talk about the things we don't talk about, that we're embarrassed about. I talk about my affair. I talk about the shame. I talk about sitting down on my daughter's bed and trying to rationalize to her that things were going to be better, that she was going to have two Christmases and fucking, you know, two homes and two bedrooms. And it was just horrible, 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 horrible. And when I share those raw moments, I've got people come up to me, texting me, hey, like, hey man, I go, right, you're there. Okay, so let's talk about how you start making decisions that are in your own best interest, right? Mm-hmm. And we're all the same. See, the four of us, we are all the same. And we all have trials, tribulations. We all have things that we're awesome at. And we all have things that we lower our heads because we know we could be better at. Mm-hmm. And when somebody verbalizes that, I think it gives everybody in the room permission to go,
absolutely.
That's me. Mm-hmm. That's me. And guess what? I'm not alone, because that guy's just, well, that guy's really messed up. I'm not as messed up as he is. But and if John Kelly can get through steroid addiction and destroying his marriage and his finances and his kid and be an alcoholic, and if he can come through that, I only got one of those things going on. Shit, I got this, you know? And then I think that lowers the barriers, and it allows people to see situations for what they are, which is a moment in time, right? Nothing's permanent. It's just a moment in time. And then I think when we look at that and we can reflect on that you know, there's absolutely no reason to apply a permanent solution to a moment in time, because this too shall pass. And then once we start believing that, that allows us to get up tomorrow.
So what you're saying is, you know, that those mistakes, they don't define you as a person.
Thank you.
And
yes.
And by having the courage to talk about your own mistakes, what I think happens is it gives permission, to use your word permission, it gives permission to be vulnerable, to say, you know, I have made some mistakes too. There are some areas in my life that could use improvement. You end up opening the door by talking about it.
I think that's what happened, Stacey. And I think that in that moment, really difficult, shitty conversations are normalized. It's not a big deal. We can talk about it. We can talk about you not being your best. And then we can also talk about how you incrementally get to that place that you want to be. The real shame in all of this is not talking about it.
Yeah.
Right. And where somebody has gotten in their life, if they've gotten down to that you know, low place is a series of decisions and choices, right? And the way out of that is to make a new series of decisions and choices and create a new reality.
Don't you think part of this too, John, is we don't give people reasonable expectations about life, you know? So I often think about this with kids, you know, we're plugging them in front of the TV, we're letting them watch Disney movies where everything becomes a fairy tale and it all works out. But I think that we do the same thing with first responders. You know, they join a profession, a field that they think is going to be filled with a lot of rewarding feelings and making a difference. And I think what draws all of us to that is knowing we will make a difference, right? But when we start, no one looks at us and says, listen, there are going to be some real struggles here. There are going to be struggles you have on these calls. There are going to be struggles you have with coworkers. There are going to be struggles you have from up above. And what's going to matter is preparing those people. And I wish we could say to the new first responders in the world, hey, these things are going to happen. But guess what? Those difficult times are going to build resilience in you. And that's what's going to sustain you in your career. And we're not telling them that, you know, we're trying to get the word out, obviously, about all the emotional aspects of things. But I really think that we should be sharing what the expectations of oneself in a career should be.
Yeah, that's a great point, Bonnie. All the issues that I faced over 30 years were self-induced. And really, the job, quite frankly, had little to do with it. It was my response to the my actions or my inaction that created these issues. And we're not mentally preparing anyone entering this thing of ours, first responder, the whole dispatch. Mm-hmm. Listen, I don't know how people become dispatchers because you want to talk about cortisol levels and then having no resolution to the what happened?
There's no outlet. Idea.
Next call. Mm-hmm. Hold on. Okay. You know, no. No way. Mm-hmm. So we need to obviously do a much better job of and you know, it can't be this doom and gloom. Most noble profession out there. There's several out there, but to allow you to be the part of solutions and total strangers and care and sacrifice and protect real world every day. I mean, that's awesome. That comes at a price if we don't acknowledge the inherent issues that we're likely to face and then provide those folks with the tools to keep the slide from becoming an avalanche. You're going to have a bad day. You're going to have a bad day. Mm-hmm. What do we do with that bad day when we get home? We don't want to inflict secondary trauma on our spouse, but we need to let them know, maybe give them a call on our way home that, hey, you know what? Really tough day, baby. I'm going to need 45 minutes because I am not right. Right? So can I have 45 minutes before you hit me with all the things that I need to do, that little Johnny's eating crayons in school? And, you know, I want to hear that, but I need to be John and not Sergeant Kelly. So I need a few minutes when I get home. See, when we don't tell our people that you need to call home to let them know what to expect, when you don't make that call and I come walking through the door as Sergeant Kelly and not John, Mrs. Kelly just thinks I'm a big jerk. And when I do that for an entirety of a career, you know, we just fell out of love. No. You drove that person away from you. That's what happened. And so we got to keep that from happening, right? Because that's the foundation of our resiliency is our family, I believe.
Yes. Well, John, as we wrap up, because we've covered some great stuff and kind of run a nice gamut of emotions. And
I have a problem talking. I'm very introverted and reserved. And I know you're pulling the answers out of me.
Exactly. It's been great doing this conversation with you. And please share with our audience what you're out there doing, how they can get in touch with you, where you are on the internet, social media, and all that good stuff.
Thank you, David. So the website is lawenforcementlifecoach.com. I know, nice and short, right? I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking. Lawenforcementlifecoach.com. There's links to the podcast, the book, the website, speaking engagements, all that good stuff is there. Do some coaching, too, for some guys around the country that are wanting a little extra support, figuring some things out. And that's usually the best way to get in touch with me.
Yeah, I highly recommend John's podcast. He's a great host as well as a great guest, and he's always having a very spirited conversation with whoever's on the show. So I recommend checking
spirited.
Out.
I like that. Spirited. Yeah. Love these David's euphemisms. So polite. I gotta write spirited down.
David is such a gentleman.
You guys are awesome. I thank you so much for the opportunity. I've really enjoyed our time together.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. We invite you to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and check out our website, ResponderTV.com, for all past episodes and guest information. Until the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.